Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
My colleague Steve Bertrand, we miss him here on the John Williams Show. He does the afternoon news now on WGN Radio, and he's doing a terrific job with his team over there. On Friday, he talked to Jenny Swisionis. Sunday marked the 25th anniversary of the Fox River Grove bus crash that killed seven high schoolers. And Jenny was a student on that bus when the train hit. She lives in, I think, Nevada now. But she was on with Steve on Friday, and he asked her to talk after some very pleasant. She was very positive. She was very affable. It was a nice conversation. But at some point, the conversation was going to come to what happened that day. And this is her description of the moment that the train hit.
So I waited for the bus.
Where were you seated on the bus?
Behind the driver. I think the second seat behind the driver.
So we're at the point where you're stopped on the tracks. You know that's unusual. Were you on the side of the bus where the train was coming?
Yes.
So did you see the train coming?
I saw a smudge of a train. As I remember, everyone started screaming, and then it got, like, silent, and then I kind of turned, and I just remember closing my eyes and feeling, like, the wind getting knocked out of me. Like being on a really bad roller coaster.
Yeah, the train, I think, was moving. I read the conductor's account where he saw the bus and thought, well, there's time, the bus will get out of the way. And then he, you know, sounded his horn a couple times. The bus didn't move. He finally hit the brake, or he hit the brake. But the bus was still moving, I think, at 79 or 69 miles an hour or something like that when it hit you. Were you injured?
Just cuts, bruises, a little bit of glass in my ears and my nose.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember? I walked off the bus, came to.
So when you came to, you started to walk off the bus?
Yes, I followed. I heard her saying, get off the bus, get off the bus. So I followed whoever, and everyone was going to like the back of the bus and out, I believe. And I remember seeing people.
Who did you see?
People like a horror movie. Bloodied and slumping. It didn't register what was going on, but I was told to get off the bus. That's, you know, what I did. And I walked off and met a couple of my friends on the sidewalk, train tracks were. And we were just stood there waiting, like, what are we supposed to do? And I remember all the people that were on the, not all the people, but a lot of the people that were on the train came up and they're like, honey, are you okay? Do you want me to mom? Is there anything I can do for you? Well, at the time, it was just like, why are you speaking to me? I'm fine. But in retrospect, I mean, it was a beautiful thing for those people.
When you were leaving the back of the bus, it's my understanding the bus was cut in half. So did you walk out like an open-ended of the bus, or do you not recall that?
I really can't say.
Right.
I remember walking off what was the back of the bus.
Right.
Where the emergency exit would go.
Sometimes we think of these events, and I would imagine at the collision, there was an incredible sound, a loudness. But after those moments of incredible loudness, often there's followed by, you know, a creepy silence. And I wonder if you remember the sounds as you were getting off the bus.
Oh, my ears were ringing. I didn't hear much of anything except we got to get off the bus. And I couldn't tell you who said it, if it was a boy or a girl. I mean, but that's what I heard. I just remember the glass breaking, just a big boom and like a shattering glass, like a bomb went off. And then after that, it was not very noisy at all.
When did you realize what the magnitude of what had happened?
Not until maybe sometime later. But the day it happened, I remember I went to hospital in Elgin. My dad took me off from work, which he hadn't done in, as I can remember, at that point. And I came home, and I saw it on the news, and it, like, it didn't really click. Like, I was watching something that I lived, but I didn't feel like I was there. Kind of like I disassociated myself, maybe.
There's one other question Steve asked her. It's just about 20 seconds of audio. I'll play it after a quick break. But there was something that sort of was happening there, and they didn't dwell on it. But I think there are instances where you are involved in a serious crash or there's a loud noise. Frankly, people who are in car crashes and their airbag explodes will say that they don't remember the sound of it. Somehow or another, our brain sort of discards that. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that where there's something loud or traumatic or awful and your brain has decided, I'm not going to keep that, and it just gets rid of it. And maybe fortunately for her, that's one of the coping mechanisms that we have. They talked about her kids that she has now, her desire to maybe come back and be part of the family of survivors because they went through this trauma together. It's too bad that the phone line was cutting in and out a little bit, but you did hear what she was saying, and I was glad that Steve had that very thoughtful interview with her on Friday. The Sun-Times did the story on Sunday. And there was one other thing I wanted to ask Steve about. I'm going to pick up a phone line and visit with your pal Steve Bertrand in just a minute. You hear Steve Bertrand with the afternoon news, Chicago's afternoon news on WGN Radio. Steve, I don't want to say I enjoyed the conversation because I know that was painful for her and maybe delicate for you, but she and you got along swell. That was a fascinating conversation on Friday.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pretty, I remember the day it happened. I was working, and obviously not nearly as impactful on me as it was on her, but it was kind of interesting to go back and relive that day with her.
It was one of the questions you asked her. Elle, if you can play that for us, right? So this is just 15 seconds, I think, but it was one other part of the conversation I wanted to mention.
Does what you went through impact the way you raise your children?
I don't know if it actually impacts my children, but the reason why I have to follow all these rules is because the seven angels.
Yeah, the seven angels who died at that intersection in Fox River Grove 25 years ago. Friday.
Yesterday.
Yeah, your conversation was Friday. So that's Jenny Swisionis. And I thought that what you were going to get from her was her saying, oh, yeah, I'm like the most careful person in history with my kids in cars and trains and automobiles. And
she didn't directly say that, but she intimated that, you know, that they have a lot of rules and things like that. So, yeah, we didn't quite get there, but I think that's probably the case.
Well, before that, though, that part of the conversation, you all just talked a little bit about how it changed the lives of the people in that community, of course, but really across the country, rules and regulations were changed. It's amazing that the tail end of a bus could even be allowed to be on the back end of the train tracks. The new bus driver didn't realize that the back end was sticking out there and the train couldn't stop in time. But generally, you know, you would have to, I mean, I lived in LaGrange Park long enough, the metro tracks, 70 mile an hour trains go right through there all the time. And the way it is now, you can't get caught that close, right? That you wouldn't be able to clear the second gate if you didn't get over and through.
Well, I think the problem was, you know, right, and there were stoplights that were too close beyond the railroad track. So if one or two cars stopped in the third, if they didn't leave room before getting onto the tracks, they were trapped. And that's kind of what happened there.
Isn't it fascinating, Steve, that when something like that happens, I mean, just imagine the trauma. 70-mile-an-hour train hits a school bus. The images and the sound, I keyed in completely on the sound, and she just doesn't remember that. And I don't think that's uncommon. I think when somebody's through some sort of calamity like that, the brain doesn't keep that.
Right. And I was thinking of tornadoes and people I've talked to with tornadoes, or places I've been, you know, after this just gargantuan sort of explosion of noise, and usually this eerie silence kind of follows it. And I suspect that was the case there, although there were 30 ambulances lined up. You know, there were 24 other students and the bus driver were injured. So it was terrible. I mean, I thought it was powerful when she talked about leaving the bus and just walking by people who were, you know, victims that day. I think she was 14 at the time.
And how little she realized what had just happened. So she goes home and watches it on TV and goes, oh, yeah, that was me. It just seems so surreal. When the passengers on the train got off, imagine that. You are in the train, and your train hits the bus, and you go to these kids. And she's like, well, yeah, I'm fine. What are you doing here? And, you know, that's such an obtuse thing for the victim here to say, but I suppose she just didn't have a sense of the gravity of it all at that time.
Well, I think that's part of it. And, you know, it's just different when you're 14, too, when you're younger.
Yes, yes.
You know, frankly, it was different for me because it happened before I had kids. Not that anything happened to me, but my reaction to it would have been so much stronger had I had children at the time, too. So, I mean, I think each of our life stages has an impact on how we view these things.